I'll open it up, turn it over to Dr. Graham.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Falco. I want to just reiterate, on March 20th, we did have a security summit, and we had a nice turnout from our community, our administrators, our teachers, security staff, and it was an opportunity for us to identify where we are right now with regard to our school security, where we are moving, and things that are currently in progress and in the works, and then some of our longer-range planning with regard to security. I did send out a letter to everybody via the school messenger. You know, that's the same system that would call you on a snow day. So there was a message that went out. That letter is also on our website, and we'll continue to keep the community informed as we move forward. And we expect to have a follow-up to that initial security forum. And certainly we've been talking about security within the context of the 18-19 budget as well. So I invite you, if you haven't had the opportunity, to go onto the website and check out that letter. I also just have to continue to trumpet all of the fantastic things that are going on within our school district. To visit our website, please. If you go out to our fields right now, they are buzzing with activities at all of our schools. There are things happening, especially with all that snowy weather in the beginning of the spring season. Makeup games upon makeup games and trying to reschedule. Things are going on everywhere right now. So please visit the website. Go on to the interactive calendar and check us out. One of the things that we've been doing over the past, it seems perhaps 2 months at this point, is we've been highlighting some of the community service activities that take place in our schools. And while it's not totally inclusive in terms of capturing every single thing that we do, because it's almost impossible to capture everything that we do, we have been highlighting some community service activities that have taken place at each of our buildings, and we've been doing them in clumps of three at our meetings. So this evening we have Grundy, Samoset, and Tamarack here, and I'm going to turn the floor over to Ms. Hines to introduce that presentation to you.
Good evening. Is this on? Okay. Good evening, President Falco, members of the Board of Education, Dr. Graham, and cabinet members. Thank you for doing this. This is such a wonderful privilege to be able to showcase this. And like Ms. Hines said, that there are so many projects that go on continuously, but tonight we selected one. So I'd like to introduce you to a third grader at Grundy Avenue, Brett Arricchio. Brett came to me at the end of September, and he asked for a meeting. And so we made a lunch date, and we got together, and Brett asked me a question. He said, Mrs. Amato, why doesn't Grundy have a breast cancer walk? And I said, well, that's a great question. I've only been here a short time, but I don't know if other people have done it or that's something that just fell off. I said, what are you thinking about? So he said, I'd like to arrange one, and I have a plan. So we talked about the details of his plan, and I can tell you this is a future CEO standing right next to me. He had all the details from everything. He made announcements with his sister Lila and friends in his class. He made posters. He made morning announcements. He made the flyer that went home to our community. He thought it would be a great idea to have everyone wear pink. He thought in an afternoon at the end of October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, would be a good time to do it. And one of the funniest things that he said to me is, we should collect dollars, not cents. And with Brett's efforts, we raised over $1,200 for breast cancer awareness. So it's all because of him. And I thank him for that.
Congratulations. Great job.
Thank you.
back up just a little bit. Yeah, go to the ledge. Yep, perfect.
Good evening. Good evening, Mr. Falco, members of the board, Dr. Graham, and our district administration. I'm sick, so hopefully everyone can hear me okay. Good evening. My name is Carissa Hagen. I'm one of the assistant principals at Samoset Middle School, and I have the distinct pleasure tonight on speaking on behalf of McKenna Homayoun. She consistently displays good character and a positive attitude in the classroom, in all of her school activities, and in the community. During the 2016-17 school year, McKenna was the leading collector of food in the 96.1 and Long Island Cares food drive to stomp out bullying. She helped Samoset donate over 10,000 pounds of food and win a private concert by the band Perry and an anti-bullying presentation by Kim Laub from Hugs. This current year, McKenna spent her lunch period during the month of November raising awareness of epilepsy and helping students understand how they can help someone who has a seizure. She disseminated important information to students and handed out fun giveaways from the Anita Kaufman Foundation. She also participates in a number of service-oriented clubs. As a member of the Leaders Club, she raised awareness of stuttering, making bookmarks that she distributed to the whole school. She also participates in our Buddies Club and often eats lunch with our 8-1 students in the cafeteria and volunteers in their classroom, helping special needs students with material they are learning in class. Scottish biologist, writer, and lecturer Henry Drummond is quoted as saying, "Happiness consists in giving and in serving others." If this is the case, it certainly explains why McKenna is always smiling. She doesn't perform community service to get recognition or community service hours. She serves others because she is an extremely kind-hearted young lady who truly loves to help others and wants to do her part to make her school, community, and the world a better place.
Same deal if you want to back up just to the ledge. Yeah. Good. Sarah. Yeah, you're cut out. Yep. Good.
Good evening, everyone. Mr. Falco, Mr. Scavo, Dr. Graham, Board Trustees, Administrative Council, District Clerk. Thank you for this opportunity for sharing some time from tonight's board meeting so I can highlight some of the wonderful things that our students have been partaking in over in Tamarack and give some kudos to our two teachers, Mrs. Monaco and Ms. Paolello, who have been facilitating numerous activities throughout the year. Tonight, I'm not going to do the speaking, and what we put together was a short video clip allowing children to share the ideas and activities they've been doing. But we did it at school. It's a more comfortable place to share their ideas, and I wanted to, you hear the wonderful things from the mouth of Babe. So, Ms. Florio, if you could play the video for us, that'd be great.
The world Alexis Muscatello, and I'm from the Tamarack Kids Care Club. My favorite project we have done was the blankets, because we gave them to kids who were in the hospital. I love being in the Kids Care Club because I get to hang out with my friends and help the community at the same time.
It's important to help people in the world because some people don't have the things that we have. And if we do the good things for them, they can have and be happy just like us.
Hi, my name's Avery. I like Kids Care Club because we help kids in the hospital. One thing that I liked was we brought in food cereal boxes and more for a food drive.
Hi, my name is Maggie Lynn. I like this club because it brings joy to others. I also like the food drive because we went to every classroom and collected the boxes and sorted them.
Hi, my name is Nick. I like this club because we do fun things to help people in need. My favorite thing was writing letters to soldiers, cutting out 3D pictures to make them look nice.
Hi, we are part of Time Out Kids Care Club. My name is Nicky. I like the Kids Care Club and I like the people. One thing we did in the club was we did ice cream for a concert. Some things we took in the bag include cheese, fireworks,
The Kids Care Club was established to empower our young citizens to recognize that their actions and words can make a positive impact on others beyond our school border. The actions of our members in the Kids Care Club not only strengthens and expands their own personal hearts, but allows others who may be experiencing a challenging time to recognize that they know that others truly care about them.
My name is Olivia Gira.
And my name is Emma Shaw.
We wanted kids who are in the hospital to be able to still have some fun when going through their treatments. So we decided to make slime. A 13-year-old girl was playing with our slime for 3 hours while getting her blood transfusion. We were very excited to do something for someone in need. It made us really happy.
That's just a small segment of the different things that our kids do, and I appreciate you allowing me to play the video sometimes for especially our little ones or even for adults sitting at this table. It could be difficult to speak. But we have a couple of members of our Kids Care Club here this evening, if we can recognize them as well. They would stand up.
Now just take a step all the way back so you're all close to each other. Yep. Perfect.
Really, really brief. For the past 20 years, the SCTA has been hosting a breast cancer fundraiser.
and this is at Bill Lombardi's. We do it in October. This year we started over the summer getting donations. We walk up and down the whole district to gather donations, and community members, each building sets up, like, we have, what, like, 200-300 baskets.
2,000 baskets of
Yeah, it's an amazing night. And I have to just give a shout out and ask my committee to come up here, because without them, there's no way we can get this done. Retirees, Val Caffarelli and Maria Fierwerga, Anna Marie Cordy, Lori Graziano couldn't be here tonight, Darlene Haas, Barbara Lehman, Vicki Moreno could not be here tonight, Mary Nair, Lori Pritchett, and Michelle Tuminelli. And I just wanted to let you know, we raised over $20,000 for cancer. And we donated to the nonprofit Advocates for Hope. It's in Suffolk County. So we're just so proud of it. And thank you so much for letting us.
Oh, thank you. I mean, we're just so thankful to be a part of it.
And ladies, did that come up when I called your name? That was to get you up here. Thank you so much. See, he's laughing because I don't need a microphone.
I know.
I have to say you can enjoy your meal. You know that, right?
Yeah, you guys want to just take a step back to the ledge? Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
Common view.
Yeah. Like the first I've ever seen that.
One more, sorry. Yep. 1, 2, 3. Thank you.
Thank you for everyone in attendance, and I hope that you will share just exact enthusiasm for how much love and support and kindness we have in our district. Thank you again.
Thank you, Ms. Hines. So, at each one of these ceremonies where we've been honoring our students, we've also been pleading and reminding people that we do have a budget presentation. So we have our budget presentation. Mr. O'Keefe is going to present to the Board of Education the final administrative presentation of the budget, the final administration proposal. And just for format and procedure of what happens next, is that this week is the last presentation from the administration. This is the last of five presentations to the Board of Education on the budget. And then next week, the board will take action to officially adopt a budget. And at that point, that's when we go out and begin to talk about what's included within this version of the budget that the board adopted. And the second Tuesday in May is when we ask our community to vote on the budget.
All right. Good evening, everybody. Thank you again. And all the prior presentations are all on our website. I'll give the families a few moments that are going to leave. We'll let them sneak out, and then we'll start with the presentation.
You're going to want to hear this.
It's riveting.
I tried.
Lock the doors, I think. We've got to lock the doors.
It must have been something I said.
Can't leave now.
All righty, and this slide just gives us the remaining timeline. Obviously, as Dr. Graham just outlined, we are near the end of the process. This is the last public presentation. Next Wednesday at our board meeting, the board will adopt the budget. May 2nd, we'll have our public hearing on the budget, which is just presenting the budget to the community one last time. And then on May 15th, we'll have our budget vote. So everyone probably saw a Newsday. The state budget was settled. Final aid runs came out. There was some increase for SACEM. You may recall from my last presentation, there was about a $3 million decrease in aid. That amount was slightly reduced. You'll see we picked up about $278,000 over what the governor's original executive budget was. And primarily, if you go back to the detail of the last presentation, you'll find that the biggest change came up on that top line, the foundation aid. We picked up about $900,000 there. But the big change this year is, even with that increase, we're still losing $2.3 million in aid next year over the aid that we have this year. And primarily, if you look down to that second to last line where it says building aid, you see we're losing about $5 million. Some of the aid from the reconfiguration from 2004 has reached the end of its cycle. The 15 years are done. So the state has stopped aiding us on that. That aid will fall off. We still have 2 years of debt payments, though, interest and principal, left on those notes that the district still has to pay. So those monies are still owed, but we have less state aid to pay those monies. Did the board have any questions on the state aid? Yes.
The debt and interest, John, how much is that annually?
About $20 million.
All right, so in 3 years, we have $20 million coming back on.
No, no, that's our total debt. Next
year,
we'll have about $2.5 million coming off. The following year, we'll have another $2.5 million coming off.
Okay.
So approximately the $5 million we're losing. This is a slide that we showed also in the last presentation. This is the revenue budget. These are the monies used to pay for the expenditures we're proposing. The only real change, if you to refer back to the last presentation, is down near that bottom where it says state aid all components. That number has been updated to the $127 million we spoke about. So it gives us a total available revenue as it stands right now at $322,887,000. So this slide is actually two different pieces. Let's just pay attention to the top first. This is where we left off in the last meeting. We said that our original revenue budget was $322,008,000. Our expenditure budget was $325,067,000, and we had a shortfall of $3,059,000. Okay, that's March 22nd, the last time we met. The bottom piece of the slide updates us where we are today. So the revenue budget we just looked at, that's now increased by that $878,000. So we're up to $322,887. And, of course, to go out to the community, the budget does need to be balanced. So we did go back to that original draft with the $325 million. Some things have changed since that last presentation. The board adopted a resolution recognizing a number of retirements. We had 21 members of the SCTA that retired as of the last meeting. So those salaries are recognized year, that the $1.368 million. So you had the $325 that we started off with. The administration is recommending an addition of 13 security guards. That would be one guard at every elementary school and one additional guard at every middle school, and that's still for the board's consideration. We have those savings and salaries that we spoke of. It's about $65,000 per person that we're saving. We're not reducing those positions, but they may not be replaced in kind. So an English teacher might retire. We might find we have a need for a math teacher, or a second grade teacher might retire. We might need a third grade teacher, et cetera. Those positions are still in the budget, just at the reduced salary of new employees. And then a number of things caused the benefits amounts to change. Certainly, the Social Security and the Medicare and the TRS will go down when there are retirees, because we'll be saving on those expenditures there. Another factor was, in the original budget presentation all the way back in January, we were still projecting paying the benefits of many of our Title I, Title II, 611 positions, our grant-funded positions, paying those benefits out of the general fund. We can now pay all of those benefits out of the appropriate grants, so I was able to remove that amount. And the biggest savings on the TRS, because we are saving nearly $1 million, initially the budget was put out with the projected amount, which is 11% of an employer contribution. We now know that number to be 10.63. And when you're looking at salaries of about $128 million, that small incremental change in percentage does decrease the expense. The only expense on the benefit side going up modestly, that $65,000 you see in the bottom, is just some additional potential ERS expenditures for the additional guards that we added. So you will see now that the proposed expenditure budget as of today, as well as the revenue budget, are balanced, that same $322 million. Did the board have any questions?
Dr. Graham, can you just explain the role of the security guards in the elementary school, what they're going to be doing?
So the function of a security guard at the elementary building is very different than the function of a security guard at a secondary building, especially a high school. In our high schools, the security guards are not only there for arrival and dismissal, but they're also walking around the hallways, making sure that students are moving along to their classes, those types of things. That's not necessary in an elementary building. You know, our students are where they're supposed to be. There's a lot of supervision with them, getting them to classes. There's not a passing time for elementary students where they're in the hallways by themselves. So at the elementary, the function of a security guard, and that's something we still have to work on with regard to a job description, but we see that more as a security presence at arrival, a security presence at dismissal, and then a security presence on our perimeter of our property during recess activities, because ultimately everything that we're hearing around security is you want to secure your perimeter and harden your perimeters. And that's how you make certain that your schools are more secure. And so that's how we see the function of the elementary security guard ending up. And that's what we envision it when we include that.
So when we put out the job description and look for those candidates, they're going to look for guards that are going to be walking the perimeters and being very visible.
Yeah. Correct.
That would absolutely be our expectation, that yellow security jacket is very prominent and apparent to people as they access our campuses, and so that it's very clear.
So, John, it says additional 13 security guards. So right now we have 9 at each high school. Is that correct?
9 on a day shift.
Right.
And then you have an afternoon shift and you have an overnight shift. There's guards at the high school level 24 hours a day.
Okay. So just so we're clear as far as what the budget is now, right now how many full-time security guards do we have?
Well, I mean, very few of them are full-time. You only have some that are 12-month guards. You have a large portion of the staff that works only the 180 school days.
Right.
Some of them don't work full shifts. Total, I believe there's 56 members of that unit.
It's 56 total.
Yeah.
So it's 56 total right now.
Right.
And you all, the administration is proposing to add 13 more.
13 to that 56. Correct.
So that's 10 at the elementary? And then
one at each elementary, one at each middle school.
And then one in each middle school.
So the middle schools will have 2, elementaries will have 1, and I think we provided the information on the high schools and the rest of the tours.
So
I think there's 9 during the day, 3 for the second shift, and then 1 overnight.
So in addition to the 325, what's in the budget right now for security guards?
Total right now?
Yes.
Is 1.468 million, I think. It should be in the updated budget notes.
So You're proposing to add another $325,000 to that.
The number that you have in your updated budget notes recognizes that $414,000.
Okay. And then does that include benefits as well?
Not on that line, no.
Okay. So
you have to add FICA benefits.
Right.
And the ERS benefits that you see down below.
So do you know roughly around how much that would be additional to our budget?
7% on the $400,000, 7.65%. But that's already netted out in that change in the Social Security and the Medicare you see below there.
Okay. So if we're looking, and the only concern I would
rough numbers all in, about $500,000.
It's just in the past we've gone through rough times. We had to do different things with personnel.
Sure.
And if it's one thing we've learned is that if we're going to put something back into the budget, we just want to make sure that it's sustainable mm-hmm. for the years to come. So if we're looking at adding these security guards in, and like Laura had said, we really need to make sure what their role is going to be,
Certainly.
What the job description is going to be, what their qualifications need mm-hmm. to be, and to make sure that we work, you know, efficiently sure. in our yeah. in
that
our
would
district.
All be things if the board approves this and then the community approves it, we work on through the balance of the school year and over the summer so that we staff for September 1.
That if we're hiring additional staff, that they're serving the function that we need them to serve. So one of the things that we're doing, just to let the community know, remind the board, is that we are currently engaged in a vulnerability assessment where someone is giving us an entire overview of all things security within our district. And we had mentioned that we weren't going to dive into anything head first and purchase millions of dollars of X, Y, or Z. We wanted to really gather that information that comes back from the vulnerability assessment and use that as the guidance for our decision making moving forward. But one of the things that has resonated and come clear, and when we look at us compared to other school districts, we do see other school districts with the guards at the elementary schools, and we've also heard and seen that it's this idea of hardening the entrance points to your campuses, and that's why we made that recommendation.
So do we still have roving guards then
yeah.
too?
Yeah.
So the roving guards are at night?
And the day.
And the day.
Mm-hmm.
So in addition to them at each building, we also have roving.
Correct.
That go back and forth between several different buildings? Is
yeah,
that
or wherever there's a need, if there's a particular problem. Sometimes if there's a transportation issue, they'll go on site somewhere, things of that nature.
Yeah, that, I mean, you could think about last year we had a couple of those stranger danger high bus stop incidences where
yeah.
people have alerted us. And when we've learned of those incidences or something like that, then we deploy some of our roving guards to that site to make sure that we have an additional security presence. Something like this, you know, where we're adding an additional security guard at each of our buildings, you know, we're going to have to think about how do we manage lunch for those individuals as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that we have to look at from a holistic viewpoint as far as all of our guards, and then how do we deploy them the best way. And that's something that we would work with our security team on, our building principals,
right.
and again, based on the findings from that vulnerability assessment.
So with the security guards at the elementary schools, are they going to be reporting to the principals at the building, or they report to administration? How does that work?
Well, I mean, every security guard ultimately reports to the director of security, but when they're stationed in a building, they also report to that principal. So it's sort of a shared oversight.
Okay. All right.
Follow-up. So the security guards at the elementary will be during the school day. It's not going to be like at the high school.
Right, we just envision it during an 8-hour window during the day.
Okay, thank you.
Before arrival and after dismissal.
Okay, thank
sure.
you.
Sure.
John, have we allocated any money for training as far as bringing them up to speed on lockdown drills and lockdown drills?
I mean, most of that's done in-house, and they do bring in some BOCES trainers, things of that nature. There's no specific additional monies. No. We would just use monies already on hand. Sure. Absolutely. Once we even identify and draw up these job descriptions and what their roles will be. Yeah, it's still a work in progress.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anything else?
I thought I'd let you finish, John, with your presentation, but this came up now, so
sure.
So I just want to talk a little bit about these security guards. First and foremost, I think based upon the current climate, it's something that we're going to do, I think. I believe it's going to happen. But I thought it worthwhile to maybe have a little discussion about the efficacy of putting a security guard in each elementary school. And I think there's a limited amount of discussion that we can have in this open forum for our own protocols to remain in place and to be secured. But there are some things that I think are worthy of consideration. I know it will make everyone feel good to have additional security guards in the school. But once again, the effectiveness of having those security guards in the elementary school is something I think that the community needs to really think about. We're looking at $415,000, really, plus benefits, plus taxes. That's a major expense on the part of the district with longevity expenses because these people be around for a while. We wouldn't want to get rid of them. Dorothy raised the concern that we've had some tough budget situations in the past, and there's always the possibility that we would need to make cuts. And there were times, I can tell you, from when I first came on the board 3 years ago, and everybody up here will remember, we struggled to find $150,000 to cut at times, or numbers in that vicinity. So this is a very large amount of money that in tough times we could find ourselves in a position where we would have to cut it. And it is also money that could potentially be allocated towards our unassigned reserves, which would help us weather a storm like that that would come up. Now, like I said, I'm not going to say a whole lot about this out here. It's just not the forum for it, but the community is entitled to know a few things. When I speak about this particularly, I speak about it as somebody who's always, you know, for a good part of my life, I've had a keen interest in security. I've worked security when I was in the military. I was attached to a military police unit. We did tremendous amounts of security. It was my old unit that, you know, unfortunately found themselves involved in the Abu Ghraib scandal in Iraq. So I understand security, and I understand it intensively, and it still remains something that I am heavily involved in training in, staying up to date in, so I don't speak out of ignorance on this. But the benefit that we would derive from one security guard in each school, I believe, is incredibly minimal, and it's more to the point that we would feel good about it. This is a feel-good thing. This is not a thing that ensures the safety, ensures the safety of our children necessarily. And unfortunately, in a crisis, we may find out that it wasn't money necessarily well spent. I would actually say that there are some things that I would be willing to share behind closed doors that we could consider as possibilities that wouldn't cost this kind of money, but would achieve the same thing, but wouldn't have the feel-good results of that we have a security guard there in the school. So that's really all I wanted to say primarily, and that my big concern, John, I was going to raise this again later on as well. You talked about the fact that the state, you know, has cut our funding back on the order of about $2 million. And my question later on to you was going to be, as we look out into the future at future budgets, do you foresee a real potential difficulty in rolling over the things that we have in this budget? We've added clubs back in. We've added foreign language down in the middle school to the budget, and a variety of other things, wonderful things that we all want to see, and I'm in favor of those things. But what are the chances that we would have difficulty in the future if the state continues to distribute foundation aid and building aid in the way that they've distributed in this budget? Will we be able to keep up with increases in teacher salaries because of contractual obligations? Because many of the savings that you found here were the result of teachers retiring and bringing in new teachers, and those teacher salaries will go up, so we won't have those savings forever. So I'd just like you to speak to for a moment, if you could, about
four years out,
5 years out, and the possibility that we can maintain a budget where we're plugging in things like roughly probably $550,000 or more in school security guards,
Certainly.
Which, of course, would go up over time because they would get raises as well.
Sure. Every year, building a budget is a challenge. Without having a crystal ball and knowing whether or not the state's ever going to go back and to a time where we have a gap elimination adjustment again, that I can't speak to. If they don't tinker with the foundation aid formula and start trying to base it completely and solely on enrollment, we're fine. Expense-driven aids are aids that are driven by the expenditures you made in the year before. So as long as you're keeping things relatively flat, you're fine. I don't see any particular issue other than the normal every year of having $3 or $4 million of a deficit when I do an initial rollover until I get all the pieces to the puzzle. But if the state were to change the game again, no, I couldn't speak to that. You could go back to that type of a scenario. I don't know, you know, how willing the state would be to go back to those days. Those were some dark days for a number of years. We're certainly in much better shape than we were financially as a state than we were when we initially had to do those things. I couldn't tell you whether or not that's going to happen.
I think some, and Allison told me I should use the microphone so that it's recorded. Is it on? Yeah? Okay. One of the things that I think, Bill, we would also be looking at is right now we're in a situation where we had the 21 retirements. We also know that there were a couple other vacancies that we have, and we're talking about replacing those retiring teachers with lower priced teachers within those spots. One of the things that we have to be mindful of is continuing to look at our enrollment. And you may have read in Newsday over the past couple of weeks, there have been some reports on declining enrollment, and declining enrollment, yet school budgets are still going up. Right now, we're in a position where we're looking to replace those retiring teachers because we know that over the course of some of these very difficult decisions that the board and that the district has been challenged with, that we've seen class sizes rise, for example. And so one of the reasons that we're committed to replacing those individuals is to continue to look at right-sizing our class sizes. There may, in that 3 to 5 year window time period, come a point where we don't need to, you know, because every year we get that 20 to 23 retirements. There may come a point where we're not replacing all of those because of the declining enrollment, and that might be a way that we can mitigate against some of that as well. But we certainly, one of the things, you know, John had presented to the Board of Education a reserve plan in August, and something that we are trying to be incredibly mindful of is sustainability with regard to our budgeting. And that's one of the reasons that we started to move some of our capital work to an annualized cycle as opposed to going out and doing a very large bond for that, is really looking at can we do these things right now and can we then support them. So that's something, again, we don't have a crystal ball, but it is something we're trying to be incredibly mindful of with regard to our finances. Do we have a 3, a 5, and even a 20 to 30 year plan with regard to the debt that we still have on some of the bonds that we've done?
Dr. Graham, when administration was discussing the security guards at the elementary schools, was the scenario brought up as far as having a security guard shared between two schools, or was it just brought up that you were looking at putting one in each building?
I think that we have been willing to look at all of the scenarios, but when we were looking at and hoping to achieve efficacy, hoping to have somebody who knows the building, who knows the families that are coming to the building. The concern with having split staff, and any elementary principal would tell you this, for, let's say, a split staff music teacher or art teacher or librarian, you know, we could probably figure out ways to do those things, but then you start decreasing efficacy. And so when we made the recommendation for the individual guard dedicated to each of those buildings, we were hoping that that would create a greater degree of efficacy.
Anyone else? Okay. I thought this slide was very important to introduce. It has nothing in particular to do with the budget. But I wanted to take a look at Sachem and our cost per pupil and compare them to our like neighbors. I know in a number of presentations, Dr. Graham has identified this large group of districts local to Sachem. These are all districts that have more than 6,000 pupils. This data is readily available on the state's website. So if you take a look, the cost per pupil, and this is general education, this is not special education, this number does not include transportation, this number does not include facilities, this number does not include debt, this is pure education and all of the supports for education. It's about $140 million worth of expenditures for our student population. Sachem has an average per pupil expenditure of about $10,500. And as obviously, I won't read through the list. You've got William Floyd and Brentwood and Three Village, et cetera. The large group average of our neighbors is $12,628. And even if we look at the entire state, the statewide average per pupil is $12,600 per pupil. So I think Sachem historically has been very, very mindful to spending per pupil and has built very, very fiscally responsible budgets. So I don't know if anyone has any questions on this.
Yeah, John, so without getting into all the minutiae on this thing, all right, I'm also looking at this and saying, you know what, maybe we're not providing our kids with some of the things that the other school districts are providing theirs. I've always viewed us as kind of a middle-of-the-road, you know, blue-collar community, and the higher rent districts, if you want to call it that, your Three Villages, Half Hollow Hills, Comac, where the home prices and everything are up a little bit higher, are they providing more for their kids than we're providing for ours? Because
you also have tax impact.
But I used to look at it as people from Middle Country, Longwood, Pat Med, Brentwood, and William Floyd would upgrade by moving to Sachem. And when I see this, I think it's great if we're being fiscally responsible. But it also appears, the way you're looking at it, like maybe we're not giving our kids as much as the rest of the large schools are providing their kids.
But that's all driven by what the board would want the levy to be and what you want the annual increase to be.
I'm not blaming her on you. I'm saying, Middle Country's spending more on their kids than we're spending on ours. That's disappointing to me.
You know, some of that is savings realized in the economy of scale as well. Right. You know, so just by a function of our size, there are things that we can realize savings on. That may be Middle Country. That's not a lot smaller, but slightly smaller, might not be able to realize. But as John mentioned, it is, you know, if you look at the number of clubs or you look at sports teams or you look at academic program in terms of a nine-period day or AP courses, or those are the types of things that we have to then evaluate as a district, as administration, as the Board of Ed, and ultimately as a community and say, yeah, we're willing to pay a little bit more for X, Y, or Z. But as John mentioned, there's a cost associated with that.
Yeah, it's value.
Yeah.
I mean, I like a T-bone steak, but a chuck steak's more reasonable. If it's bigger.
Are we going to Sizzler or are we going to go to Blackstone's? Any questions?
The point of this, and this is not meant to be misleading. Oftentimes people want to figure out a per pupil expenditure and they take the total budget, divide by the number of students. That's not how this is derived. This is how the expenditures for a district, as John mentioned, on educational expenses are reported to the state. This is comparative purposes, right? Mm-hmm. This is not we can rest our hats that we're only spending $10,500 per student. This is a comparison so that if we want to compare what are other places around us doing, this is how we do that.
Okay, so this is just a quick recap. The revised budget, as we stated, is $322,887,000. That would be a budget-to-budget increase of 2.77%. This year's budget, just as a reminder, is $314,191,000. Our five-year budget-to-budget average is 239. So this year's budget is very much in line with our prior year budgets. Just to remind you about the tax levy, there were no changes as a result of the state aid runs. The only thing in the state aid runs that would have impacted the tax levy would have been any other changes in building aid, because that's what the major driver is of why our levy is 573. So if you go back to that very first presentation where I spell out how the tax levy is calculated, you'll see why, you know, Sachem's a 573, where one of our other neighbors might be 2.5. When you have a decrease in building aid like this, the way the formula is set up, that decrease becomes an increase in levy to give the district the additional funding that was lost through that decrease in building aid. That's why that number is that. But even at 573, which is going to be hard, most people are expecting to hear something in it too, it's within the tax cap, and it only requires a simple majority vote. So all our STAR-eligible homeowners will still receive their tax credit checks. And within that levy, we did increase some of our capital monies by about $1.3 million. So we have 2.85 earmarked for next year for capital projects. And like we said, we're going to build on that annually, pay as we go, try to stay away from bonding money and incurring additional debt. The items next year are a new pump, a filter, the piping, the deck drains, everything over at High School North. They've outlived their life. The fuel tanks here at Transportation, those need to be replaced. That's the EPA and Suffolk County Department of Health. Those have exceeded their useful life. And we're talking about a partial roof replacement over at Waverly. All of Waverly's roof, other than the forward section that we discussed that's right on Waverly Avenue, does need to be replaced. I would phase this in over years. Possibly next year we could do the balance of the roof on that building and then look at other buildings. And then we're continuing with our school bus fleet replacement. I've earmarked enough monies to support 6 additional school buses next year. So then this budget passes, and this is acceptable to the board and the community. This time next year, we'll have 12 new buses in the district, and we'll just keep that process going until all 33 of them have been changed. Any questions?
So, John, when you have the $2.85 million, that's an estimate because until, like, the RFPs go out to replace the...
The amount that's budgeted is an exact amount.
Right, but
the amount that we spend cannot exceed that amount.
But we don't know if it's going to be under that amount.
Right, and if it's under that, those are monies that are unspent. We cannot spend more. It's just like when you go out with a bond campaign.
Right.
Whatever the bond campaign is, that's your maximum budget. So we can't spend more than the 285. If something were to come in higher than what we anticipated, you know, we either have to trim something off of it, pay for some of that out of general fund, or reduce the award. Maybe we only have five buses, something
right.
to that effect. We must stay within that budget.
And so in the two, where'd you come up with that number, based on estimates that we've
Correct.
Received?
Yeah, the buses, we know what the buses
right.
cost, and then our architect prepares estimates for the roof, the tanks, and the pump.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That capital project list is just a partial list, right? There's other smaller things.
Sure, I mean, if you go back to
well.
the bond list from 2 years ago,
there's
we took the five-year building condition report,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and we've been prioritizing the items that need to be replaced.
The ones that you have up there are just the big ones.
Right.
There are
this is the next
several
batch.
Small ones.
I mean, we need to start working on, you know, roofs everywhere,
mm-hmm.
parking lots everywhere. I mean,
yeah.
if you've been driving around the district,
mm-hmm.
I'm currently repairing parking lots at 13 of the buildings right now. Some are just small patches. Others are larger patches, just because some of them can't wait for a full-fledged replacement. And property taxes. Mr. Matlatt and I touched on this in the last presentation, but this just draws out the numbers to the exact amounts. So up top, you have the projected school levy. The current year levy is the 177. Next year, as it stands, is at 187,157. That's the only thing that the board approves. It's the only thing that the community approves. None of us have any control over what happens once we give those numbers to the assessor's office. The other unique thing we have in Sachem is we have to deal with three different assessor's offices. We have Brookhaven, Islip, and Smithtown. And the way we divvy up that 187 or the 177 this year, that's determined by a formula given to us by the state. They give us equalization rates, and then we take that amount, and they tell us, okay, 64% of the levy is going to go to Brookhaven, 31% of the levy is going to go to Islip, 3.8% is going to go to Smithtown. That number changes based on the values given to us by the state. So this is only as accurate at this moment in time based on the numbers we know today. So in the first column, you have in real-time values, and if you compared it to what we did when we adopted last year's budget, you'll see slight changes because the assessed values changed, equalization rate changed slightly. This is what the average home in Sachem pays in property taxes in each of the three villages. The second column is the projected change, what it would grow to. And in the last presentation, you know, we were just rough estimating. We said that annual increase would be about $360 per household. As you can see, in Smithtown, that's rather accurate. It's a little bit less in the other two towns, the way the equalization is broken up. It's about $320 for a Brookhaven home, $348 in an Islip home, and $365 in a Smithtown home. The final numbers and equalization rates we won't know till next fall, at which point then we'll set, the levy amount will be set, then we'll let each assessor's office know what the amount is, and then they break it up to the tax bills for each of the community members. Questions?
So one of the things that we've been attempting to do is to remind everyone that we've come a very long way since we were up here, or since all of you were up here having conversations about school closings. And trying to navigate that murky water, try to look at budgets that are now sustainable and that are not, I don't want to say restoring programs because we once had them, because what we're trying to avoid doing is just replacing something because we once had it and putting it back. We want to look at the programs that we have currently, do an audit of those internally, and determine what enhancements we would like to make. And that's our rationale when we look at all of the programs that are occurring within our school district. We are not putting things back in our schools because we always had them. And that's something that's important for us to really frame out there. So when we look at this current budget as proposed, we do maintain all of our instructional programs and overall staffing. Currently, the Board of Education has board targets for elementary class size. Within this budget that's proposed here, we're able to reduce those class targets by one at each grade level for our elementary schools. We maintain our current advanced placement, our honors, our college-level courses, our music and art offerings, K-12. We maintain our interscholastic athletic activity teams, our PD initiatives, which we have a ton of, and we maintain our funding to replace aging and outdated desktop PCs, Macs, printers, and start to really rebuild our technology throughout the school district. And not only does it maintain those things, but we have enhancements within here. Excuse me. You may have recalled that earlier in the budget process, we made a presentation about our flex program. At the middle school, we have a period that essentially equates to a study hall. We've developed a plan to add world language as an option for all of our seventh graders, or for the majority of our seventh graders. That's something that most of our other districts surrounding us, most districts on the island, offer world language at the seventh grade. This budget supports the ability to do that and to begin to have our students have the opportunity to study Italian, French, or Spanish during seventh grade and continue that course of language study throughout their high school career. It allows us to add those security guards that was talked about earlier, expanding our co-curricular club offerings. One of the things that we found, especially at our high schools, is while on paper it looks like we have a huge slate of clubs based on the allocation, we found that not all of those are truly clubs. Some of them are honor societies where it's exclusive to a group of students. Some of them are dedicated to a class, like freshman class, sophomore class. Some of them are based on involvement in the prom. And so when it came down to it, we were really looking at only 16 or 17 club activities at each of our high schools. This allows us to enhance that and to have conversations with our students about what types of clubs they would like us to include. And there are also some allocations within this for additional clubs at the middle schools and elementary schools. It allows us to support our allocation for students in their study of art and music. The way we allocate supplies across our district throughout our schools is a per pupil expenditure. So this increases that per pupil expenditure for music and art supplies at all of our schools throughout the district. It includes funding to restore supplemental student accident insurance. We had a conversation at the board earlier this year about student accident insurance, and that's that supplemental insurance policy that most school districts do currently offer. We do not. An individual, family, or a parent would have to go out and purchase that supplemental plan, and this provides for that within the budget. Additional funding for technology, including Brightlinks, which are really like smart boards. They're a board and then a projector, document cameras, robotics kits, components, elementary computer carts with a device. So our intention is within this budget to have a cart at each building now dedicated for additional computers. And again, that's part of a multi-year plan to enhance our technology with respect to our technology instruction. Replacement for equipment for our athletic program. There are a number of items that John had mentioned earlier during the budget process. There were things like wrestling mats and then some portable bleachers. There were things that have been identified as needs for the athletic department in terms of equipment. And then the capital work that's mentioned at the bottom.
Okay, and that concludes my presentation. As we said, next week the board will consider the final budget and adopt it April 18th. And the budget vote is Tuesday, May 15th. Are there any further questions?
John, back to the co-curricular, and I didn't look through this, all of it, but do you know how much we budgeted, what was in the budget line this year for 17-18 for co-curricular?
For total co-curricular? Yeah. You have that number handy? Ron's been waiting all season for me to call on him. looks like $427,000 is in this year's budget, and next year we're looking at, was that $487,000, which is a $59,000 increase.
Okay.
So a little shy of a half million.
Okay, and then I also noticed in some of the information, as far as the security, the total dollar change is about half a million. It's about $500,000 year over year.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, I think the increase includes some security materials, roving guards.
Contractual increases, things of that nature.
Yeah, the, it says roving guards was about 5,000, part-time roving guards full-time about 6,000, and then the building security guards was 424,000.
Yeah, so 414 of that would be the 13 we added. So 10,000 would have been what the increase was before we added the 13 guards. So those were just would have been contractual increases.
Right, so altogether it's about a half a million increase.
Correct, for the whole department.
And then also in facilities, let me just go back. Facilities, it looks like there's a, about $122,000 increase
in equipment.
For equipment, correct. Mm-hmm. So just remind me, what was that for?
If you remember to that bond where we had the $6 million worth of equipment, we took that big $6 million list and we divvied it up over the next several years.
I remember.
So it's some more truck replacements. It includes an asphalt hot box so we can start doing some of our own hot patching. It includes two replacement security vehicles so we can retire some more of those old Crown Victorias. It includes a large-scale lawnmower to be added to the fleet, and I believe two smaller tractors and lawnmowers. So it's a slight increase in the amount of equipment that we added to the budget over this year's budget. It's the same type of materials.
Right. So you had a slight increase there in facilities, but then you had a decrease with electricity. So
yeah, well, as the solar and the cogen start kicking in, the electricity bill, I'm still conservatively only scaling that back slightly. I probably have more room there.
Okay. And then under service contracts, it was an increase of $141,000.
Yeah. I'm just trying to earmark, like with this project that I'm doing now with asphalt, I'm trying to earmark additional facilities monies so we can do other projects during the year. So, again, we stay away from bonding.
Okay.
These would be projects either done in-house or, like with asphalt, we bring in a vendor.
All right. And then, Dr. Graham, I just had a question about the class size again. And I know we had talked about it previously as far as going back to where we were as far as the class size with the elementary. The kindergarten, I think, started at 25. I think first grade was 26. Second grade maybe was 27. And then 27 again, and then 29, I think is what it went up to. Last year, we were pretty close to those numbers anyway, even though our board guideline was a little bit over that, was one over that. So now we're going back to where it was prior, right?
Yeah, we would be taking those existing targets that you had mentioned
right.
and then setting them at one lower so that if we got into a situation where there was a section at a particular school, because, again, a lot of this is dependent upon which school it shakes out and where somebody lives. But if there was a particular section at a building that hit, let's say, in third grade, that 27, if we now set the target at 26, we would break a section.
Right.
So that becomes the new indicator for breaking that section.
So, John, how did you budget that? Did you just put, like, placeholders in for additional full-time teachers in case we have to break
sections? We kept the entire staff the same. We rolled over the staff. But based on the projections of staffing and the number of pupils in each cohort in each building, we project that we'll be able to lower the target by one.
Yeah.
So you rolled over the personnel that we have now.
The number of
personnel rolled over. Knowing that enrollment's going down.
They may not all be in the same places.
Yeah.
Okay.
So but the personnel rolled over.
You know, and those targets are a little tricky. I don't want us to just get caught up on – I know those are what we've used in, for guidance. But, you know, when we talk about class size at the elementary, I was just doing this and looking at them. We have 36 sections across the district at each of our buildings now. And our average class size for kindergarten this year is 21.5. For first grade, it's 22.5. Second grade, it's 23.5. Third grade is 23.5, fourth grade it's 24.5, and fifth grade it's 25.5. So, you know, we can sit and determine that we're going to lower that target, but like you said, we're not living at that target right now. So I think that's something just important to note. So there were three elementary retirements included within those savings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the types of positions that when we look at replacing those positions, they're currently in the budget. Those are, you know, if we're looking at elementary class sizes, that's how we're able to do something like that.
And then what are we looking at on the secondary level? Because I know in the past we were trying to keep the classes below 30. I think they were going in, with 27 was the divisor, I think, at one time. They were using that. trying not to go over 30 in most of the secondary classes?
Yeah,
there were exceptions.
We're still using that as our guidance. This year, when Dr. Morrow built the masters and did sectioning with our secondary principals, both for the 17-18 budget and now in process for the 18-19 budget, we've been trying to build sections at lower than that 30. So when we're looking at we need 1.0 FTE of a science teacher, let's say, that's looking at the sections at that number lower. Ultimately, when it comes down to balancing sections, you know, you may have too many kids that have restrictions within their schedule that require us to have a fifth grade, let's say, at 31, a fifth period, sorry, at the high school at 31, and then you may have another section at 23 or something like that when you run the schedule, and those are things that we attempt then to balance. But when we're building, we're attempting to build at those lower numbers.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Just one question.
Yeah, Rob?
Dr. Graham, the numbers for next year, do you have the because I remember kindergarten and first grade being the same. And I want to say it was 25 and 25, and then it went 26, 27, 28, 29. I don't remember even numbers in the middle there.
Do you have it?
Yeah, I thought kindergarten, first grade was the same. So based on those numbers, are those numbers going to go 24, 24?
Yeah, we would lower them by one.
They'd be one lower.
Yeah.
Because this year the guidelines were supposed to be 26 in kindergarten. So are you going back to 25 or are you going
no,
to lower?
I don't have the targets on me. Like, I don't have them committed to memory. I apologize. Does anybody have them?
Right, that's currently. You're going to 25.
Tony, what were they again?
26, 26 is K and 1.
Right.
27, 28, 29, 30 for fifth grade. Next year it would be 25, 25,
yeah.
26, okay. 27, 28, 29.
Yeah.
Because I think
that's what we're
looking
at.
If we were going to go lower than that,
yeah,
you might have to add in 9 full.
Right, that was the conversation we had at the last meeting. Yeah, so there was initially a discussion. And I was talking in terms of if we had dropped one from where we are right now, that we would have to add additional staff, not realizing that we're already living lower than what the current board targets are. So if we're lowering them within the context of this budget, we're talking about taking the existing targets and lowering them by one student.
Okay.
Yeah.
One other question. You mentioned the world languages in seventh grade, and that's to replace the flex. Sixth grade students going into the fifth grade is going into middle school in sixth grade. Do they have potential flex program at that age, or they don't have flex?
So they would not have flex either, because when you add the world language to seventh grade and to that additional period where flex formally was, then you have to move some of the other middle-level requirements around.
Okay.
There are requirements with regard to FLACS, which is home and career, like your old home ec. There are requirements with regard to technology, health. So when you add world language into the study at seventh grade, we have to move those things into sixth grade. And students have a window. You're allowed to meet those middle-level requirements anywhere in between fifth and eighth grade.
All right, so the flex would be pretty much eliminated.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have
kids
sitting in it.
Okay, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you.
So, Dr. Graham, we're not actually losing, like, a technology or a consumer science class in the middle school. It just could be that students may not take it in seventh grade.
Yeah.
They may take it in sixth grade. So
yeah.
We're not losing a period or because those are required, right?
Right, that's right. So the state provides districts with a lot of flexibility with regard to when you can meet the requirements of the middle level. So currently we have a set way. That's the Sachem way. That's probably how we've done it for quite some time. So adding this into seventh grade forces us to shift when we offer some of those middle level requirements. But it's not eliminating something from a child's program.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's it. Anything else, John?
That's it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, John. Not so quick, but. Yeah. Just wonder if they're going to, some of them will reject the objective. Yeah. Okay. We have one. Dana? Okay. No, I don't need it. I just wanted you to see it.
Hello. We were looking through the agenda a little earlier and noticed that 5.1.2 on page 8 seeks the approval of agreement with Hall of Fame Dance Challenge Incorporated for the dates at Sachem East of May 4th to May 6th. And we just have concerns. We want to put it on the record. May 4th is going to be sports night at East. And that could be a huge problem with parking. We will be outside on the football field. We will not be using the auditorium, but we anticipate a full house of at least 1,500 people, and we're already concerned about parking at East and that there may be an overflow to Brookhaven. So if you're going to bring in some kind of recital, there'll be an issue with parking at that time.
Yeah, that's
so I want to bring that to your attention.
Oh, for this group?
We're talking about just the 4th, yes.
So, I mean, something we could do is, look at getting further information on that to see the degree of conflict or whether or not we can accommodate both groups and then not have it acted upon on tonight's agenda and put it on because we do have a board meeting next week, so we could put it on to next week's agenda should the board wish when we get to that item.
What are the hours of sports night?
Well, the actual hours of the program will probably be between 7 and 9, give or take.
So it's the same time
yes,
when
but yeah, people will yeah. be, arriving early, leaving later, but the actual program will probably be 7 to 8:30.
I'm sorry, Dana, does the PTA put a request for facilities for that night?
Yes.
The request is going in. I haven't placed it yet because we were dealing with getting dates.
Yeah, I think, for Debbie and Dana and for the board, Aaron has been working with these guys and our building principals have been working with them to reframe sports night a little bit and think about it moving forward and really look at an east feeder pattern, a north feeder pattern. And so some of these plans were just finalized within the,
past
week and a half. Mm-hmm. So that is something that the PTA will then submit a building use form for. But that's why this wouldn't have come up as an initial conflict at this point because that hasn't been done
right.
yet.
Right. These dates we chose quite a while ago, but as Dr. Graham was saying, the plans haven't been cemented until just before vacation.
Okay.
So
okay.
I just have a quick question. So you all are doing it outside this year.
Correct.
Right? So do you have a rain date?
Yes.
So I guess we have to make sure with the rain date, too, to make sure that there's nothing else planned.
Okay. And, I need a motion at the table. 5-1-2. Mike, second. Sarah, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. All right, 5-1-2 is tabled.
Just on a side note, I'll be emailing all of you further information about the event because, as we always do, we would like to invite you to come, be a part of it, to judge. So at East, it will be on Friday, May 4th, and at North, it will be on Friday, May 18th. With rain dates, also in there. But I will send you information. We hope that you'll participate. It's a completely different concept, and I think it's exciting. I hope that everybody enjoys it. I hope it's a huge success.
So, Dana, only 2 dates, you're going to have 5 at each?
Correct. Yes, and it will be outside on the football fields.
Those stands are going to
be packed. It will not be school versus school. We're going to have instead, we're calling it the celebration of the red, black, and gold. So we're going to have 3 teams, and we're going to have an opening ceremony where all the teachers who arrive to, who will be participating that night will be drawing out of a hat, a bucket, something, to choose which team they'll be on. And we're going to be providing red, black, and gold T-shirts that they'll throw on like a penny, so they'll be able to see who which team is which. And then we're going to, just like at medieval times, where if you've been there, you're seated in sections and who you root for. So as the spectators enter and they go to a particular section, they'll be rooting either for red, black, or gold.
So it's not per school.
So that's just, the basics, but I will send you further information.
Good.
So,
Okay. Let's get back.
Dana, a suggestion for next year?
Yes.
Maybe the Board of Ed and the Cabinet puts a team in.
We have actually been proposing that for about 20 years, and I can tell you that that has always been voted down.
Mike,
so.
Mike will be captain of that. Yeah. I oppose that also. Okay.
Dana, you know, my son Michael will
cuts.
Be my stand-in.
We're making Good. Cuts. We're in it to win it.
I'm happy to have him there.
Thank you.
Jeff Keegan?
Good evening. Jeff Keegan. We've spoken once or twice before. A couple of things on the budget. One, I find the chart that shows the expenditure per pupil across the districts quite informative. Mr. Matlock, you're exactly right. It does speak to quality of education. As hard as our teachers work, as hard as the administration works to maximize our use of the dollars we have, the dollars are limiting. You all know it will be extremely difficult, given the way the state requirements are, for you to change the revenue over a short period of time. But I would point out that the biggest difference, as I understand it, between Sachem and the rest of the large school districts is the number of periods in a day. And it has frequently come up during the discussions at board meetings that if we had another period, we'd have the flexibility to allow children or our students to be able to get into more electives, more programs, more classes that they need. So long-term goals are important, and I'm not suggesting that this is a short-term goal, but I heartily recommend that you look at this chart, take it to heart, and say that the long-term goal is not to spend more money specifically on an existing program, but to find a way to squeeze in that ninth period. It's critical. The other thing I'd like to ask about, and I missed a meeting, so I apologize, is we've had previous discussions about security, and one of the key issues was installing the security vestibules in each building. And as I understood it, this was part of our statewide bond issue for technology, and while we received approval from the state for the design, we did not receive approval to spend the money. And there was a delay of expected to be 12 to 18 months for those funds. Last time I was here, you discussed including those funds in your budget because it was too important to wait. I was surprised not to see it in the budget today or hear any discussion about it, and it's probably because I'm missing a fact. So if someone would share with me the status of that, I think it's pretty critical to our long-term security.
I think, Jeff, one of the things that we were doing is we knew that we had the allocation and the plan submitted with regard to the Smart Schools money. So we had that allocation of $3.5 million. And when it came down to looking at it, we understand that there's been some political will and some political pressure to expedite the approval process. Now, we haven't seen the results of that yet, but we're being told that this is going to go faster than what we were initially being told. So rather than include that $3.5 million portion within the current general budget as proposed for 18-19, we made the determination to wait to see the results of the vulnerability assessment. And again, should they determine that it's necessary to do that tomorrow, you know, that would have been the decision driver in that regard. But because we have that allocation, you know, I don't think that there was necessarily will to give up on that funding stream and go forward with it out of the general fund.
I understand your logic. I think it would be helpful to the community, perhaps at the public hearing, to make sure that you express that intention, because it is my understanding that many people are concerned about how easy it is to get into our buildings. So Mr. Coggins' point, security guards are great, but they don't replace man traps. So thank you very much. You all have a tough job ahead of you. I hope we're successful getting this budget through.
Okay. Business items. Consent agenda, items 3A1 through 3A2. Motion, please. Sarah, second. Terry. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Personnel items, consent agenda 4A1 through 4C6. Motion, please. Laura, second. Mike, you have a question?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I looked at 4A6, approval of chaperones for the senior trips. There's 11 north and 18 east. Do they split them up, 29 of them, and they go half and half, or why is one more than the other?
So that list is perhaps deceptive because it's not all-inclusive. That list does not include SCTA members, so teachers who are going on the trip. And the reason it doesn't is that's they have it within their contract. That's an established rate. That doesn't require us to put that on the board agenda.
And that was my other question because I noticed there were no teachers there. And
right.
I'm an old man now. The teachers used to go on that trip.
So they still do, and that makes the number of chaperones. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head of exactly how many.
It was just a big disparity.
Okay,
that's why I asked.
So this resolution gives non-SCTA members the ability to be paid at that established rate.
Okay.
Laura? So and. Dr. Graham, if we could just get a list of how many SCTA members are going for each school, just so we have a rough number.
Yeah, we can get the numbers of chaperones that are going on each of the senior trips.
All right, thank you. Dr. Graham? Dr. Graham had actually already asked me to get an updated itinerary of both of the trips and all of the chaperones, including teachers, so we'll send that to you pretty soon.
Okay. Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Action items. Consent agenda, items 511 through 515.
Mr. Falco,
yes.
I think the board had voted to remove 512 at this point.
Okay.
So I think that we just need to revise the consent items.
Okay. Let's go 511 through 515, excluding 512. Is that all right, Chris? All right. Rob, second Terry. Any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Okay, donations. Hiawatha Elementary School donated $8,473. Motion, please. Bill, second. Laura, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Linwood PTA donated $1,032. Motion. Mike, second. Terry, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Merrimack Elementary, $7,383. Motion, please. Bill, second. Laura, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Samoset Middle School, $1,404. Motion. Terry, second. Rob, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Waverly Avenue Elementary School, $9,649. Motion, please. Bill, second. Mike. All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. 526, this is Hunter Joseph Riley. Motion, $404.40. Motion, please. Laura, second. Terry, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Transfer $50,000 or greater. Motion, please. Terry, second. Rob, any questions? Go ahead.
John, can you just explain what the transfer is for, please?
It's just allocating enough monies for the health insurance expense for the C fund or the cafeteria fund employees.
Okay, so it's for the their annual increase?
It's a health insurance expense.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Policy review. This is the second reading. We need a motion, please. Laura, second. Rob, any questions? All in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Recommendation on Committee on Special Education. Motion, please. Bill, second. Terry, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Monthly reports, committees, legislative, anything? Laura?
So we had another curriculum council meeting. Erin did a great job, and Mr. Wells from Cayuga did a presentation on the amount of screen time kids spend on the computer and everything like that and how it's affected depression rates, suicide rates, and it was a very interesting presentation, and I had heard it when I went to the budget, the advocacy workshop at BOCES, but hearing it the second time was even more you're more mindful of how much time kids spend on a computer, on a social media, and how it affects their social and emotional well-being. So is that presentation on our website, Erin?
So right now, Mr. Wells, who is actually here in our audience, so I just want to thank him again for that outstanding presentation. The thing that we're just safeguarding around is making sure that all of the language that's in the presentation is not being cited towards the author. So as soon as Matt is sort of done with that, Mr. Wells, excuse me, I apologize. As soon as he's done with, loading that, we'll look at everything, then, we will post that on the website, as well as our parent book talks that we're having around that. So I appreciate you sharing that with everybody. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, any other committee reports? Legislative, audit, nothing? Okay. At this time, I need a motion to go into executive session. Before I do that, we have any future agenda items? Laura?
Dr. Graham, the Detective Lent who had done, you met with and you said will be, presenting to staff. Is there any way the board can sit in on one of those presentations or have a presentation for the board? Because I found it so informative, especially as we all discuss security, as to what the police or what their recommendations are and what we should be looking at.
Those presentations are currently being scheduled. Dr. Morrow has been handling that with Detective Lent. One of the things that Detective Lent had indicated to Dr. Morrow is that I think prior to Parkland, he was doing one of these a month or something, and now he's doing multiple a day. So rather than perhaps scheduling a separate one for the board, we may, look at the dates, and then we can share them with you so that if you wanted to attend one for the faculty.
Thank you. And then looking into the future, to have an assembly done at the high schools, is that something that's still being considered?
Yeah, I think all of those things are definitely being considered. One of the things that we're doing is just, we're going to review the content of the presentation and make certain that it's appropriate for our students, and then how would that be beneficial to them. But it would be certainly something that would be a part of our holistic approach to security moving forward.
All right, thank you.
Any other? Okay. A motion to go into executive session for the sale or lease of property. The employment of particular personnel, legal advice relative to pending litigation. Motion, please. Dorothy, second. Terry, any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. We will not be coming out for any votes.